You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
If you missed that second hour of the first hour was great. The Kurt Schlichter piece on the media was amazing. And the guy who did a dramatic reading of it, pretty amazing himself.
Pretty amazing, yeah.
But second hour, woof, Schweikert giving you the meat and potatoes of the Stimulus Act and how to access stuff, right? And
useful information.
And go to schweikert.house.gov. He's got a great list of all these things. Then we had the Homeland Security Director, Chad Wolf, calling in about supply chains of emergency equipment, plus what's going on at the Arizona-Mexico border and Canadian border, but who cares about the Canadian? No, I'm just kidding. Love your hockey and your maple syrup. And Rush, Brian Adams, Neil Young, Glass Tiger.
Joni Mitchell. No, sorry.
Is that it? Are we done with Canada?
Okay.
Oh, we love your natural woodlands. That's about it. Nova Scotia is probably nice. Ed's going to call up right now. He's going to get off the air, and he's going to call up author Sidney Powell, which is part of his directions to get Sidney on. The book is called...
It's funny because she already called me once last hour, so I asked her to call back.
Oh, so then you got it.
So,
you're on it, so you don't have to do anything.
She's not called back yet, so I will call her.
It's not a problem. Not a problem. The... Oh my God, I forgot about this with toilet paper all being a big thing. Adriana just shared her sculpture she brought to an anniversary party. It was the John Winchester sitting on Ray Carroll's lap toilet paper sculpture she made. I forgot about that. Woof! Who knew? Who knew? Basically, the book, Sidney Powell, we'll get to her. It's called The Conviction Machine, talking about the possible abuse and too much power that federal prosecutors have to do their stuff. So we're going to have her on in just magical moments, as we say. I can see Ed. He's laughing with her. He's making it happen. So let me do this. I'm going to read Sidney's, bio, because, you got to have the bio. So it's, this is right off of her site. I'm going to read it like, former federal prosecutor, I can talk today, represented individuals, corporations, governments, and federal appeals for more than 20 years, past president of the American Academy of Appellate Lawyers and Bar Association of the Fifth Federal Circuit, member of the American Law Institute. She contributes articles on government misconduct and prosecutorial misconduct. This sounds like my kind of lady. And she appears frequently on multiple television stations as a legal commentator. Author Sidney Powell. That's a hell of a bio. Nice job.
Thank you. Good morning.
Where are you locked down today, Sidney Powell?
I'm locked down in Dallas, Texas.
So I was on the Encounter Books, your publisher site here, and I like the first sentence. Prosecutors can, quote, indict a ham sandwich, unquote, we hear, and laugh at the absurdity. Let's talk about your journey to write this book called Conviction Machine, your experiences, because basically this is called Conviction Machine, Standing Up to Federal Prosecutorial Abuse.
Well, when I was a baby lawyer, I was a federal prosecutor in Western Texas and Northern Texas and Eastern Virginia under 9 different U.S. attorneys from both political parties. And not a single one of them would put up with any of the nonsense I've seen in the last 20 years coming out of the Department of Justice. I've encountered prosecutors making up crimes. They destroyed Arthur Anderson and 85,000 jobs by making up a crime.
What was the crime they made up, Sidney?
They made up a different kind of obstruction of justice. They used the witness tampering statute to try to indict Anderson for destroying documents, but there had not been a subpoena issued to Anderson, and they hadn't committed a crime. They pieced together parts of two different statutes. So the Supreme Court, 2.5 years later, reversed it unanimously.
After Arthur Anderson blew up.
Destroyed. Yeah.
So what was the tipping point 20 years ago, Sydney, that the DOJ
leans on. I wish I knew. There's been an explosion of criminal laws passed, which means that my co-author, Harvey Silverglate, wrote a book called Three Felonies a Day, premised on the fact that the average person going about their daily business commits three felonies every day without even knowing it because there's so many laws.
Right.
And you combine that with prosecutors who like to see their names on the front page of the paper and figure out they can punch their tickets to seven-figure salaries in international law firms or become the assistant attorney general if they, you know, take out enough big people that they just abused the law. And during the Obama administration, it really went berserk. They would prosecute people to achieve their social and political and social justice objectives.
And we've been doing this show for right at from the beginning of the Obama administration. So we have documented that famously, the misuse of federal power in those cases. So has it gotten better under Trump?
No, it's not better yet. I know Bill Barr wants to restore the rule of law, but there's a lot more that needs to be done on that. I represent General Flynn, among other things, and I've said publicly that the first step toward restoring the rule of law and integrity in the Department of Justice would be to dismiss the completely made-up case against General Flynn. They made up all of it.
What's the immediate future for General Flynn right now? Where are you at in that case?
We have moved to withdraw his plea of guilty for multiple reasons: the government's breach of the plea agreement, their bad faith and retaliatory conduct against him for the last year while he was trying everything he could do to cooperate with them except lie. They wanted him to lie in the Eastern District of Virginia case last summer against his former federal partner, his former business partner, and he refused to do that, of course. And we've also moved to withdraw because of a conflict of interest by his former lawyers and their ineffective assistance of counsel. And they had done the FARA filing for him, the Foreign Agent Registration Act filing. It was, according to the government, it had false statements in it. Frankly, I don't think any of the statements were false, but instead of pushing back against that, Covington adopted the Flynn lied to his lawyer theory that the government had and essentially teed him up to be enter a guilty plea, didn't tell him information he needed to know before they did that. And the government was hiding information that showed he was innocent. They knew they'd made it up. And then they coerced him by threatening to indict his son the next day if he didn't plead guilty.
We're talking to author, lawyer, Sidney Powell. The book is called Conviction Machine. I want one last question about this before we get to the book. Is Bob Barr the right guy at the right time for the DOJ right now?
Bill Barr, sorry. Hope to goodness he is. That remains to be seen. I'll let you know when this case is thrown out.
Thank you. What does he need to do? What does he need to do in the actual nuts and bolts of DOJ for reform? What would, if you were going to give him two or three suggestions, what would they be?
Well, for one thing, I'd issue a memo explaining to prosecutors that they have the obligation to turn over all information that's favorable to the defendant. And if I caught them hiding anything intentionally, they would be looking for another job at a minimum and might even be prosecuted for obstruction of justice, depending on how bad it is. And the same needs to go for the FBI. None of this business of leaving exculpatory evidence out of FISA applications.
Right.
And, of course, the inspector general just came out with a new report yesterday finding more FISA abuses across the board in every single file he looked at, including missing information from them. And that's another problem. They supposedly can't find the original interview report of General Flynn, and the drafts that they produced show material alterations before it was finally approved by Andrew McCabe himself weeks after the Flynn interview. They sneaked an FBI agent into what was supposed to be a presidential briefing August before the election, August 17, 2016, to spy on Flynn and Trump. That's unprecedented. The case should be dismissed for egregious government misconduct. I mean, they could start to clean it up by dismissing the case against General Flynn.
Sydney, are you? Do you have another interview coming up in like 3 minutes that I need to know about? Or can I keep you for one more segment? Because I got off on all this. I want to talk about the book. So can you hold on for one more segment, please?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Thanks. We're hanging out with author Sydney Powell. We're talking about a book that her and Harvey Silverglade have. It's out right now. You can get it on Amazon and other fine booksellers, as we like to say. It's called Conviction Machine, Standing Up to Federal Prosecutorial Abuse. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. If you can't chill out to Marvin, you got problems. Marvin should be listened to during your lockdown here in the social distancing era. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson at Alexander Christopher DeSimone. I'm going to get to the Bill Bennett piece next half hour about the second opinion on the coronavirus. And if you miss Congressman Schweikert or Director of Homeland Chad Wolf in the previous hour, head over to KVOI.com podcast page. We are talking to Sydney Powell. The book is called Conviction Machine. Sydney, welcome back. Thanks for holding. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Tell me about the book. When we open up the book Conviction Machine, what are we going to find here? We're going to find a history of this and hopefully how to stop it from, or at least mitigating it in the future?
Yes. You're going to find anecdotal examples of some of the horror stories Harvey Silverglade, my co-author, and I have encountered in our respective careers, and then solutions for the problems that we've identified. There are, of course, far more than we've identified, but if we got these 9 or 10 things done in the next year or two, we'd be a long way toward solving the problem.
You talked about the Arthur Anderson case. Give me another case out there that's a poster child for prosecutorial abuse from the federal side.
Well, the Flynn case is one right now.
Sure.
We've just talked about that a little bit in the prior segment, and then it's discussed in the book also. Another one is the Merrill Lynch Enron litigation, in which the same group of prosecutors that destroyed Arthur Anderson made up a crime against the Merrill defendants. They criminalized innocent business conduct, and the judges were so blind on the issues that four innocent Merrill executives wound up spending up to a year in prison on this fake crime while the government hid the evidence that showed they were innocent. So one of the things we propose is a change in the law to make penalties attached to prosecutors who do not produce evidence that's favorable to the defense. Right now they have a constitutional and ethical duty to produce it, but they get to define what it is. That is completely unacceptable. They wind up withholding anything they want to withhold.
So who's dropping the ball, Sydney? Who's dropping the ball on accountability with these prosecutors? Who's that?
Everybody. the Department of Justice, the judges, the bar associations, everybody. Prosecutors have absolute immunity. They can't be sued for anything they do while they're doing their jobs. Police officers operate under qualified immunity, despite the fact police officers have to make life and death decisions, including defending their own lives, in a split second with adrenaline pumping. A prosecutor can destroy somebody's life with the stroke of a pen on an indictment that's researched and contemplated.
If we were going to have the, of the last 10 to 20 years, the top three prosecutors that are the biggest abusers, who are they?
Andrew Weissman, who wound up on Mueller's hit squad and is featured on my website, creepsonamission.com.
That's a great website.
A t-shirt to go with that. Mr. Mueller is one of the violators, James Comey, Andrew McCabe. Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Bruce Orr, who's still in Department of Justice, everybody on Mueller's squad, Brandon Van Grack, who's the current prosecutor of General Flynn's case, they've all been doing it.
790-2040. Let's go to Barney on line two. Barney's on the line with author Sydney Powell. The book is Conviction Machine. What's up, Barney?
I'm wondering, Sydney may have already answered this, but is there absolutely no possibility of lawsuits against any of these people in their personal capacity for knowingly doing what they're doing?
No, not really. There is a very narrow statute under which suits can be brought against prosecutors, but it is so difficult, it's virtually non-existent.
There you go.
Very good. I'm sorry to hear. Thanks for thanks for what you're doing.
Barney, thanks for the call.
Oh, you're welcome.
790-2040 is the phone number. We're talking to Sidney Powell. The book is called Conviction Machine. Had you ever written with Harvey before?
No, I hadn't, but we were aware of each other's work. And when he started Conviction Machine and then called me and asked me to join the project with him. I was, of course, honored to do that.
And you're still friends after writing a book together?
Yeah, we are. Even better friends than we were before.
All right, I'm going to have one last question to you. It has nothing to do with the book, but it's Conviction Machine. Remember, it's a Sidney Powell and Harvey Silverglate, and you can get it on Amazon, find booksellers. As you're sitting there, a lot of you guys are discovering that you own dogs now and you have books. So here's a great thing to read while you're distancing from each other. So, Sidney, when I get to Dallas the next time, I need one or two great local places that we need to eat. This is when I get back on a plane after this is all over. Give me two places in the Big D that we should be going to.
Oh, Albernaz is one of my absolute favorites.
Now, is that two words? Is that a guy's name, Albernaz, or is that all one word?
Yes. No, it's a guy's name.
Okay. What does he do?
It's on. I don't know, but he runs a great restaurant.
What kind of food?
Everything. Steak, seafood. It's probably the best steak in Dallas.
Nice. And what's your second place?
Oh, that's harder because that's my absolute favorite. Dallas has scads of good restaurants. If you want casual Tex-Mex, a place called E-Bar is great.
Okay. E-Bar. What do you get at E-Bar?
I get the enchiladas usually or the fajitas, and they make the best flan I have ever eaten anywhere. And I lived in San Antonio for years.
Ed and I are already on the Albernaz website as we speak, so we're learning more that it's BIERNAT apostrophe S, Albernaz. So
yes.
Well, Sidney, sounds like a hell of a book, and keep giving the feds hell. That's all I can tell you. Give mission. Creeps with a Mission. That's the best website I've heard.
Creeps on a Mission.
Oh, Creeps. .com.
You need to pull that up and then blow up the graphic because there's all kinds of great detail in the graphic, but you have to blow it up to see. Like, Comey is trying to delete 33,000 emails on Hillary Clinton's computer. Weissman is stuffing FBI 302s that are yellow highlighted with Brady back in his briefcase. Bruce Orr is handing the Steele dossier to Mueller.
I am opening it up right now. Creepsonamission.com. Sidney, you're a total delight. Good luck with the book. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks so much.
Sidney Bye-bye. Powell, Conviction Machine. I'm on Creeps on a Mission right now. I know what I'm going to be looking at during the break. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Bill Bennett, a second opinion on coronavirus. Wake up. If you don't get moving to glamorous life, you got problems. Big problems, Jerry. Big problems. All right, let's go to the phone. 790-2040. In the field, reporter, umpire John is elbowing some octogenarians for some toilet paper. What's up, John?
Hey, I'm at the Safeway. I've done Sam's and Safeway here in Flagstaff during the geezer hour, and it's all good. There's plenty of bread. Had toilet paper over toilet Sam's size toilet paper over there, and we're finding things in pretty good shape. Not like you remember Kurt Schlichter's article about, standing in front of empty aisles? Not here.
Look
Can't
at that.
Find it.
Look at that. Look at you.
Is everybody kind of civil over there?
Oh, yeah. You all, except there's this a little old lady who keeps kicking. Oh, it's my wife. Never mind.
Oh my God. Beat the hell out of him, please.
Yeah. No. Now, Kurt Schlichter's an interesting feller. He sometimes subs in for Hugh Hewitt, who you have a little later in the morning.
Yeah.
But he's also a retired Army colonel, which is good, and he's a lawyer in L.A., which is not so good.
That sounds like a sitcom, right? I'm a army, a former army who's a lawyer in L.A.
Yeah. Well, it probably needs those skills in L.A.
Well, John, thanks for the in-the-field reporting, and when you get off the phone, please apologize to your wife for that old lady comment, please.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Guilty as homemade sin. Bye-bye.
Later. Umpire John calling from the Sam's Club in Flagstaff, Arizona. This is what goes on here at Wake Up Tucson. So I want to get to this. This is Bill Bennett and Seth Leibson, and, of course, Bill, former Secretary of Education, and then, of course, he had his own syndicated radio show. And Bill's a pretty reasonable and smart cookie. So this is from a couple days ago on Real Clear Politics. It's called Time for a Second Opinion. As we pointed out before, each death is a tragedy and horrible, but the chance of it's also very small, depending on if you contract the virus and what your age is and underlying medical conditions. Will the number be much larger than the annual rate of flu deaths? We have already lost 24,000 Americans to the flu this season and expect that number to rise at least another 24,000. Maybe a little more. Coronavirus at half that flu number would be much smaller than our annual rate of opioid overdose deaths. We are losing 46,802 Americans to opioid deaths. And annual deaths due to motor vehicle crashes is at almost 34,000. For none of these problems, some caused by nature, some acts of our own volition, have we or do we change literally everything from stay-in-shelter orders to travel bans to shuttering almost all of our retail and service businesses? We've lost perspective. Epidemiologists and others in public health and medical professions have opined that the worst is yet to come. But already they have offering their own second opinions. Niall Ferguson and his Imperial College study gave us the St. Patrick's Day headline. A chilling scientific paper upends U.S. and U.K. corona strategies. It warned of 2.2 million deaths in the U.S., by last week, Dr. Ferguson changed his predictions, and Dr. Birx of the White House Task Force said, I'm sure you've seen the recent report out of the UK about them adjusting their needs. This is really important. They've adjusted that number in the UK to 20,000. The original estimate by Dr. Ferguson was 500,000, and now it's down to 20,000. So when you start talking about 20% of the population getting infected, it's very scary. But we don't have data that matches that based on experience. That first analysis received a lot of headlines, and the revisions downward, of course, not so much. Dr. Fauci's making headlines for saying we've actually been warned for weeks, bigger numbers, hypothesizing rates that could reach six figures. Looking at what we're seeing now, I would say between 100 and 200,000 cases of death. But then he added, but I don't think we really need to make a projection when it's such a moving target, you can be easily wrong and mislead people. So think about that, okay? So listen to that whole sentence from Dr. Fauci Sunday, because this was another freak out. Maybe he regrets saying this. I don't know. So this is Dr. Fauci again. Okay. What are they doing at CPEC over there, Ed? It sounds like they got someone attached to a rack or something over at CPEC.
Making noise across the wall. It's crazy.
Quote, looking at what we're seeing now, this is Dr. Fauci on Sunday afternoon, I would say between 100 and 200,000 cases of death. But then he added, I just don't think we really need to make a projection when it's such a moving target and you could be easily wrong and mislead people. Unquote. Every media jackass said Fauci says 100 and 200,000 people dead. And you got to be careful when you're on these mics. Though we were told we would see and hear larger numbers as more and more testing became available, They are treated as new and alarming information. His qualifiers about being wrong will be ignored by the media. His statement, here's a statement by Dr. Fauci. I've never seen a model of diseases I've dealt with where the worst case scenario actually came out. They always overshoot. From the same interview, that line will also be ignored. Because of this, we've curtailed our freedom and hurt our economy. How did we surrender so much so fast? Perhaps we've gotten used to alarmism or worse. What historian Richard Hofstadter once labeled the paranoid style of American politics to describe the Barry Goldwater movement in 64 is now firmly at home in the political and social rhetoric today. Hofstadter wrote he used the word paranoid simply because no other word adequately evokes the sense of heated exaggeration, suspiciousness, and conspiratorial fantasy. And he was describing the American right in the 60s. From the moment of Trump's election, respected editorialists, political commentators said his election would ensure everything from a global recession to threats to the Constitution. Donald Trump, to too many members of Congress, was, quote, a dictator and someone who was tyrannizing our communities, unquote. He reminded them of Germany in the 30s, unquote. The frontrunner of the Dem Party, Joe Biden, even said our president is, quote, an existential threat to America. This all before anyone knew where Wuhan was or what social distancing meant. That irresponsible rhetoric, analysis, and forecasting has helped pave the way for simply too much panic or paranoia, a tendency to believe the worst, a disposition to overreact. To help restore sense of calm and normalcy, we ought to look at this disease at the center of harm and engage something like a more vertical strategy, as the New York Times' Thomas Friedman recommended. Quote, sequestering those among us most likely to be killed or suffer long-term damage by exposure to infection, while basically treating the rest of the society the way we've always dealt with the flu, unquote. So what he's saying is those 70-plus folks that are very susceptible to this, you put them, have them do the stay at home, and everyone else you treat society just the way you've always had. And you know something? There's a lot of truth to that. The horizontal strategy of restricting movement and commerce of an entire population without consideration for varying risks of severe infection is too blunt, too paralyzing, and too haunting. Barring that, Hofstadter, though wrong about the 60s, would be right about today. We're shutting down America and harming a great many Americans based on the worst fears that have not been true and are not on the horizon. We're scaring the hell out of the citizenry. A few additional statistics help counsel a lowering of the national temperature. The vast majority of deaths from the virus are people over the age of 70 with underlying frailties. The focus on New York, where of course most of the media is based, is also flooding and distorting the picture for the rest of the country. Of course we need to pay attention to Ground Zero, which is New York. But what happens when it's not happening everywhere else? For example, our most populous state, California, shows 149 deaths. That's 11% of the total in New York, Texas, and 11% of the total in New York. Texas, our second most populous state, shows nothing like the death toll of New York, with only 47 deaths, with 3.5% the total of the Empire State. Let's go to break. There's a lot more good stuff coming from Dr. Bennett and Mr. Libson. I've got another paragraph or two, but
just a reminder to folks, Bill Bennett, Dr. Bennett, was the Secretary of Education under President Reagan and Office of National Drug Control Policy under George H.W. Bush.
Man, so again, New York has 149 deaths, which is 11% of the total deaths of New York. And they shut down that whole state. Okay? Texas has 47 deaths, 3.5% of what's happening in New York. And we're going to shut down shut down the rest of the country. Bill Bennett, Christy Simone, Ed Alexander.
See, for all you folks who don't get up in the morning too early or miss us at the 6 o'clock hour, you miss the breakfast burrito song, man.
It is National Burrito Day.
It is.
All right, let's finish up the Bill Bennett piece called The Second Opinion with Seth Leibson, co-wrote this with him. Again, our plea, look at the numbers, look at everything rationally, and let us reclaim a sense of proportion. In the early 1990s, Daniel Patrick Moynihan warned that our country was defining deviancy down. Today, we're concerned about defining pandemonium up. We have a problem. Rather than engage in heated exaggeration, suspiciousness, or conspiratorial fantasy, as Hofstadter warned, we should focus our solution on it without upending everything else. Paranoia and overreaction do not suit our democracy well. So, the Kurt Schlichter on the media in the first hour was rocking. But this is a very reasonable, this is from Real Clear Politics, Bill Bennett, Seth Leibson. This is a really good one called Time for a Second Opinion. Now, one thing locally I want to get to, I got a question about someone texted me a question about the Board of Supes meeting, which I'll just get to quick about. So remember, it had to do with the voting of who's the chairman of the Board of Supes. And Ramon Valadez, the fortune cookie teller, he's already the vice chair, so he is already considered the chair of the Pima County Board. So what? I don't know what's on the agenda in relation to appointing Richard's replacement, but that's going to come. I don't know if that's on today or not. I know Steve Christie's on with Billy Buck later at lunchtime, so you'll hopefully Steve will you'll hear something from Steve about that at the 12 o'clock hour. Leo Sayre from AM Gold at the Arizona Daily Star has a very important story, I believe. It's called, quote, this is from Tucson.com, quote, world turned upside down for Chinese American owners, restaurant owners in Tucson. So, of course, what's happening is you have some folks, because it comes from Wuhan, China, that the Chinese American person who's been living here for the last 40 years is somehow secretly has some sort of, you know, extra bat woohoo flu running around their place. And I just, please, if you just think about your summer. So we know, it was so great that John and John Holden went to this is June Dynasty a few nights ago, but just have a little extra. This is already a tough time, right? But now that if you have Chinese food, there's Americans who are saying, well, we're not going to your place because of the Wu flu. Well, there's so many amazing Chinese restaurants in this town that deserve your patronage. And of course, I've had this. There's certain ones that I like, of course, that's on the old DeSimone HQ page, which I do have to change. It says 10 years on the air. I got to go 11 now. That's so crazy. But Asian Spice in Marana, amazing. Silver Bell in Cortero. June Dynasty, Kung Fu Noodle, Mark and I love those guys over on Fort Lowell and Campbell. And then, of course, Vina. I don't know if he's open. Vina Street Food. Fat Man Kitchen does some good work. I'm sure there's some others I'm missing out there. But it was a good piece, I thought, by Justin Sayers on The Star saying, hey, just because they're Chinese food restaurants, you know, slow your roll, as we like to say. It's not like any of you people who hate the border stop going to get Mexican food. Or the open border kind of thing. You guys were eating it's National Burrito Day. You were eating your burritos like they were going out of style. George Encinas at the Green Valley News, he's one of Dan's reporters. He just came on board in the last couple of months, and he is really doing good work. Again, not that we expect Dan Shearer to hire not a good reporter. But, you know, and Kim Smith was there. She always did some good work. And now George is doing good work. And he does a nice profile of the longtime political families each have a candidate for Elias's seat. And I'll put this up when I get back to the office.
Very good.
So it says two new candidates from families with deep political roots in southern Arizona are filed to fill the vacant seat of Pima County supervisor from the unexpected death of Richard Elias. Consuelo Hernandez and Atalita Garajalva filed for the District 5 seat Monday. Hernandez is a member of the Sunnyside School Board, but she also filed to run for Pima County Recorder because Ed was looking her up when Richard called up. And so she's going for the more important seat, which is the soup seat.
Sure.
She's the sister of Alma and Daniel Hernandez, Legislative Districts 2 and 3. And, of course, Adelita Grijalva is a member of the TUSD School Board. Her dad was on the TUSD. Ed, this is a question you kind of asked me, like, what did he do before? So he was TUSD School Board Raul.
This is Raul.
From 75 to 86. And then he was on the Board of Soups from 89 to 2002 when he resigned to run for Congress. And, of course, they appointed Richard Elias to fill his seat in 2002. There are two other Democrat candidates in the race. This is we have Trista Trampoch, DeGenova Chang, who also is that two people or three people? Oh no, that's one person. So Trista Trampoch, DeGenova Chang. Wow, I can't wait to get her on the show one day just so I can keep saying that. And then Republican Fernando Gonzalez. We love Fernando. He's running as a Republican. It says none of the candidates have submitted the 199 valid signatures to appear on the ballot, which are all due on Monday. I know a lot of this is happening right now, and I know they're, you know, someone put up a picture. Matt sent me the picture of someone running around getting Adelita signatures with their mask on and their gloves. So
because politics can't wait for the virus.
It's so cute. He said, Ramon, again, I just told a Tucson television station that he would look for an appointee who isn't running in November.
Bullcrap.
All of a sudden, you're going to change decades of machine protocol that the person who's got to run for the seat is not getting appointed? I mean, that would be such big thinking and rebellious for Ramon Valadez. I would be unbelievably, if Ramon Valadez really didn't vote for Adelita Grijalva for that seat, I'd be floored.
Yep, that'd be a seismic shift.
Yoda Pajamas Mark Evans said the board might discuss the appointment process during the regular meeting on April 7th. So we'll go from there. Anyway, thanks for a hell of a show today, Ed Alexander.
Whoa, no, you did it all as usual and brought good stuff with us, Schweikert, and then the 6 o'clock hour was great. 7 o'clock hour was, geez.
Yeah,
amazing.
Schweikert gave great meat over three segments.
For SBA, for anybody with a small business, have questions about...
And anything with the stimulus, even if happening. You're an individual, yeah. And all that stuff. And then he answered Al's question, our pool guy, of course, because mm-hmm. he's a 1099 kind of guy. Yeah. We talked about that. That's going to be made into a YouTube because that was too good. And then he was followed by acting director of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf. And then we had author Sidney Powell, who was a total rip mm-hmm. about the book. She's defending General Flynn right now against the federal government. And the book's called Conviction Machine with her and Harvey Silverglade. So tomorrow we got Lorena from La Hacienda. Sean McCluskey will be here with more restaurant stuff. And we will have someone, local SBA lender, talking about SBA loans too. And Doug Ducey, possibly. Wake up.